Okay, this week's parasha is Parashas Emor, and we will start from page 682. Page 682, Pasuk Tes, verse 9. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Emor, and Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, Daber el Bnei Yisrael, speak to the Bnei Yisrael, v'amar talayim, and say to them, when you come to the land, that I am giving you, you shall harvest its harvest, its grain, and you shall bring an offering called the Omer, the first of your harvesting to the Kohen. Now, this is referring to the Omer carbon. The Omer carbon, we're counting now Sfiras Omer. We do the counting of the Omer. But really, it's a counting that starts from the point of time that an offering, a sacrifice, was brought in the time of the Beis HaMikdash called the Omer. Now, the Omer was a carbon mincha, it was a meal offering. That means it was flour and oil mixed together. Part of it was separated and burnt on the altar. And this carbon mincha, this meal offering known as the Omer, it was a communal sacrifice. It wasn't what an individual brought, but rather it was a communal sacrifice brought on behalf of the entire Jewish people. It was unusual in the fact that it was a offering made from barley flour, not from wheat flour, but from barley flour. And actually, when it came to the grains that first grew or first ripened in Eretz Yisrael, barley was the first. So the Omer is an offering brought from barley. It is brought on the second day of Pesach, bearing in mind that the second day of Pesach in the Torah, which is in Eretz Yisrael, there's only one day of the actual Yontif. So the second day of Pesach was already Chol HaMoed. The Omer was harvested on the night, during the nighttime of the second day of Pesach, and brought on the second day itself. And this carbon was called the Omer. That's what it's called. Now the pasuk et al, verse 11, Vehenif es haomer lefnei Hashem l'tzeinchem, the Kohen shall wave the omer before God l'tzeinchem to bring favor for you. Mimacharas haShabbos inifenu haKohen, on the day after the Shabbos, the Kohen shall wave it. What does Shabbos here mean? Shabbos here means the first day of Pesach. Doesn't say he will bring it the day after the Chag of Pesach, after the Yontif of Pesach, refers to Pesach as the Shabbos. That's what it's referring to. Again, it's a Yontif, it's a day of rest, the first day of Pesach, and therefore it can be called Shabbos. But here it doesn't mean Shabbos like any other Shabbos. Here it means it's specifically referring to the first day of Pesach. The day after the Shabbos means that after the day after the day of rest, referring to the first day of Pesach, the Kohen shall wave it. And you shall perform on the day that you wave the Omer, keves tamim ben shnasa lo'edel Hashem, a unblemished lamb, which is within its first year, as a burnt offering for Hashem, meaning along with the Omer, which is an offering itself, there was an animal that was brought. The animal had its meal offerings that automatically came with it, its libations that came with it, and the last thing that the Torah mentions is the fact that without the offering of the Omer, you are not permitted to partake of the new grain. That means any grain that was planted after last year's Pesach, in Eretz Yisrael, the times of the Beis HaMikdash, and according to many opinions, it still applies today outside of Eretz Yisrael, but anything that was new, anything that had grown since last Pesach, you are not permitted to partake from it until the Omer sacrifice was brought. And that's what allowed everyone to eat what was called chadash, the new grain. Okay. Now, I want to share with you a very interesting, it's a gemara, it's a medrash, and it takes us back to Purim, where there is a medrash that states that the carbon omer, the omer sacrifice, was, you should give it lots of importance, because it is what protected the Jewish people in the times of Purim. It is what protected the Jewish people against Haman. And the Medrash explains that we know that I believe it's the sixth chapter of Megillas Esther that begins how Achashverosh, the king, couldn't sleep. And he had his Book of Chronicles read before him. And what did what was read? The fact that Mordechai had saved his life. Achashverosh asks the servant reading to him, has anything been done to repay Mordechai for what he did? And the answer was no. Just then, who happens to walk in to the king? To the king? Very good. Haman. And actually, as the Megillah tells us, Haman had actually was coming now to Achashverosh, for some reason in the middle of the night, but he was coming anyway, to convince Achashverosh to hang Haman, Mordechai. So when Haman walks in, Achashverosh asks him, what would you say we should do for someone who the king wants to honor? Haman thought, it's got to be me he's talking about. And he actually said, you know, that he would suggest that the person who the king wants to honor should wear the king's crown, ride on the king's horse, wear the king's garb. And Achashverosh said, great idea. Now you do that and get Mordechai and do that to him. So Haman now had to go ahead and find Mordechai. So the Medrash says, what is Mordechai doing at that time? So at that point of time, Mordechai was fasting together with his students because of the decree that came out, and he was studying Torah with his students. And the Gemara, the Medrash says that Haman came to the base Medrash, to the study hall, and when Mordechai saw Haman walk in, he said to himself, "Snishgut, this is not good." And Haman approached Mordechai's students, and he asked them, "What are you learning? What are you studying now?" And the students of Mordechai answered, "They are studying about the Omer. They are studying the sacrifice of the Omer, and how they told him about the Omer, and they mentioned to him that the amount of the Omer that's brought on the altar, which is the amount that's always brought by every meal offering on the altar." Is you take, the Kohen takes three fingers, it's called the Kmitza, scoops it up from the flour and the oil, and that's what he throws on the altar, the rest of it goes to the Kohanim. So the whole grand offering that's done for the Omer is this little scoop of oil and flour, that's what goes on the altar. So the Gemara says that Muhammad said, your handful, we'll call it, or your handful of Omer is going to override, it's going to overpower the 10,000 silver coins that I gave to Achashverosh to get him to agree to destroy the Jewish people. That's what Haman said. Haman said, so after the students told him about the Omer, this is what he said. He said that this small offering of the Omer, that's gonna overpower anything that I did. That's the Medrash. And we know that Haman understood that, you know, things now are going downhill. You know, Mordechai, he had to lead Mordechai, and when he came back, his wife said to him, if you're starting up with the Jews, it's not going to work. I mean, things really were heading down. But the fact that the Gemara tells us that Haman had this reaction about the Omer, about what the students tell him about the Omer, means that there was some kind of message that Haman understood from the Omer that made him say that. You know, it sounds very nice and everything like that, but there has to be something to it. There has to be something to the fact that that Haman responds. He asks them, what are they learning? They tell him what they're learning, and he responds, oh, this is what's going to overpower what I tried to do. This is going to undo what I did before. What did he hear there exactly? So the I saw it brought down from the Maharal, that the Maharal explains that the Gemara says that Hashem tells us to bring the Omer sacrifice. Hashem says, bring me the Omer, and I will bless your crops. That means that the point of the Omer, and the point being very strongly, that we can't even eat from our grain until the Omer is brought, it means we have to first recognize and show our gratitude to Hashem for giving us these grains. It's not us who determines that we have the grains. It all comes from Him. And we are acknowledging the fact that He is the one that sustains us, that we are dependent on Him. And when the students told Haman about the Omer, right, they were imparting to him this idea. And Haman realized that in this little bit of Omer that's being offered, the Jewish people see in that and acknowledge that Hashem is their source of life. And Haman said, if the Jewish people have this trust and understanding and belief that their whole dependence is from Hashem, then I'll have no power over them. I won't be able to overpower them. This is gonna, if they have that kind of strong trust and belief in God, I won't be able to overpower them. It'll clearly undo what I tried to do before. And therefore, that's what the Medrash means when it says that the Omer protected the Jewish people during this during the time of Purim, because it was the lesson of the Omer that the Jewish people had internalized and shared with Haman that now made Haman realize that he truly cannot do anything to Jewish people. They are truly under the protection of Hashem. Okay. Now, another thing that I'd like to point out is the fact that I mentioned that Pasuk et Aleph, verse 11, says, Mimachras HaShabbos Yinefenu HaKohen. On the day after the Shabbos, the Kohen shall wave it. And we said that, as Rashi points out, the Gemara points out, that Shabbos here doesn't mean Shabbos, but it means the first day of Pesach. Now, this word Shabbos, in this context, was a very great point of controversy amongst the Jewish people. Because there were those who said, it doesn't say Pesach, it says Shabbos. Which means that the Omer has to be brought, not after the first day of Pesach, but after Shabbos. Which they said, I guess based on the context, it's the first Shabbos after Pesach. And that means that the Omer has to always be brought on Sunday. And we know that we count 50 days from that point and we have Shavuos. So according to those, and there's no date for Shavuos in the Torah, there's no date. It's 50 days after, it's 50 days from the counting, from the bringing of the Omer. So according to these people, Shavuos always came out on Sunday. These people were called Tzedukim. The Tzedukim were a group of Jews who denied belief in Torah Shabbal Peh, in the oral law. Torah Shabbal Peh, the oral law that we refer to as Mishnah, Talmud, these are all parts of Torah Shabbal Peh, Torah law. You know, there is a, when we study on Shabbos, Pirkei Avos. So, Pirkei Avos begins, Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai. Moshe received the Torah from Sinai. And the commentaries point that right away. Moshe Kibel Torah. What does Torah refer to? Both parts. There's a Torah Shebiksav, the written law, Chamisha Chumash Torah, the five books of Moses, and then you have the Torah Shebapeh, the oral law, which is referred to as Mishnah. Now, in the oral, the Torah Shebapeh that we talk about, that we say, that means when Moshe received the Torah from Sinai, that means the written law was received from Sinai, and the oral law was written from Sinai. The laws that we have in the Mishnah, which are expounded upon in the Talmud, in the Gemara, they come from Sinai. And the truth is, as the commentaries point out, that Torah Shebaal Peh actually helps us understand the written law. The oral helps us understand the written law. And it actually gives us the scope. It helps us know what's the scope of the written law. So for instance, the Torah tells us to wear tefillin. What does it tell us to wear tefillin? We say, "Ksharetem la'os al yodecha." You shall tie them as a sign on your hand. Ula totafos beinenach, and there should be totafos between your eyes. What in the world are totafos? How do we even know what that means? How do we know what it means? What's it referring to? If you open up a chumash, right? We say, "What's totafos?" We say tefillin. How do you know? Torah doesn't say the word tefillin. Torah doesn't even describe what you're doing. That's right. It just says that these words are going to be, you're going to tie them on your hand and put them between your eyes. What? Where? What am I doing? What am I doing? It doesn't even say what I'm really doing. And the answer is, the only way that we really know what you're doing for tefillin and in many things is Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law. The oral law told us exactly what the Torah meant. The Torah meant you're tying these boxes. They're square. They're black. And they have these parchments in them. Okay? So that is what Torah Shabbat Peh does for us. Now, the Tzedukim, which are in English called the
Sadducees. Sadducees.
Martin, Sadducees. How do you pronounce, what is it? No. I think it's the Sadducees. I think so.
Doesn't matter in English. Pronounce it what you want in English.
Well, that's right. I think it's pronounced Sadducees.
It was translated.
Okay. Now, they said, no, we don't follow that. They denied the oral law. They denied Torah Shabbat Peh. And they interpreted things supposedly literally, but sometimes they couldn't translate things literally either because there's nothing there. What are you going to work with? Which means that basically they kind of did things on their own, which was really what they wanted, right? If I don't have to listen to Torah Shabbat Peh, if I don't have to listen to the oral law passed out by the sages, I don't have to listen to the sages, then I can interpret it the way I want to. Now, these words, where it says, Mimachras HaShabbos, this was a classic. This was like one of the main points of contention between the Tzedukim and the sages who are known as Prushim. This was one of the main points. This became like one of the main, fights, arguments that they had. Shabbos, Torah Shabbat Peh tells us, the Orla tells us means Pesach, first day of Pesach. And they said, no, it says Shabbos, and it means Shabbos, and that's it. That's it. Okay. Now, I want to share with you something very interesting that the Rambam, that Maimonides writes, and gives us the background history to these Tzedukim. And it actually is the Rambam's commentary on the first Mishnah of Avos. We talk Perkei Avos that we have in the Siddur during the summer between Mincha Ma'ariv. You're supposed to read a chapter of Perkei Avos every week, okay? Actually, Perkei Avos is a Masechta. It's a tractate of Mishnayos. In Mishnayos, it has 5 chapters. In Pirkei Avos, they added a 6th, because they wanted to get a chapter per each week between Pesach and Shavuos. So, in the Rambam's commentary to Avos, the third Mishnah, the first chapter, third Mishnah, reads like this. Al tiu ka'avadim ha-mishamshin es-harav al-benas l'kabal pras. Do not be like servants who serve the master with the intention of getting reward. Ela havu ka'avadim ha-mishamshin es-harav, but rather be like servants who serve the master al-benas shaloi l'kabal pras. Shaloi al-manas l'kabal pras. Not with the intention of receiving reward. So the Mishnah says, don't be like servants who serve the master for reward. Who are the servants? Who's the master? We are the servants. Hashem is the master. Now, when a servant works for their master, a slave, right? A slave can't go up to the master and say, you owe me a week's work of work. Doesn't work. That doesn't happen. But a servant, a slave, can hope for a reward, right? A child, right? We don't pay our children for doing things for us, right? But we will sometimes reward them for what they've done. So we talk about the word pras means a reward, and when we look at the reward that God gives us for our mitzvahs, it's not payment; doesn't owe it to us, but it's a pras, it's a reward. And the Mishnah says, don't serve God with the intention of getting reward. Meaning, don't do your mitzvahs because of the reward that's in store. But rather, do it out of love of God. Not because of what he's going to reward you with, but rather because you recognize his greatness and all the benefits that he's done for you and for the world. And because of that, that instills love in you. And you want to reciprocate. You want to show your love back to Hashem. So this saying, right? This saying, don't serve the master with the intention of getting reward. So I'm going to ask you a very basic question. Is there reward?
Yep.
There certainly is. It's one of the Ikarei Emunah. It's one of our basic principles of our faith. There's reward and punishment. But the point of the Mishnah is, don't do the mitzvahs for that. Now, to be very honest, That's the level that we all start off with. It's a level that we pretty much stay with our lives. And hopefully there are some times that we raise ourselves up a little bit and reach certain levels or feelings of love to Hashem. That Mishnah, the author of that Mishnah, of that saying, was a man named Antignus Ish Seichai. When he said it, he wasn't saying there's no reward, Chas V'Shalom. He was just saying, don't serve Hashem for reward. So Rambam writes that Antignus Ish Seichai had two students. One's name was Tzaddik, and the other one's name was Bisus. Tzaddik and Bisus. Tzaddik, Tzedukim, right? Now, the Rambam lumped Tzaddik and Bisus together, and their future followers. So Tzaddik and Bisus heard their Rebbe say this.
So Kahanim.
Oh, yeah?
I think.
So the Rambam says they both heard their Rebbe say this, and they took it as, nah. If he's telling us to serve without the intention of getting reward, they said that means there's no reward. That's how they interpreted it. They interpreted that when he's telling us not to work for reward, he really means to say there is no reward. There is no reward. And therefore, what they decide, now if your feelings are there is no reward, that's how you feel. So what's the next step you're going to take, or you could take?
Do everything you want.
Do whatever the heck I want. Do anything I want. Right? There's no reward, there's no punishment, there's no responsibility, there's no accountability. So, you know, yeah, I guess if I want to, you know, show love God, I could. But, you know, if I don't want to, I don't have to. And essentially, they actually wanted to create a movement within the Jewish people that says, no Torah, there's no reward, there's no punishment, let's just stop all this stuff. The problem is, says the Rambam, couldn't get any followers. Couldn't get people to do that. The Jewish people would not accept that. They would not do that. So good politicians have to change their platform. And instead of the platform being no Torah, the new platform became no Torah Shabbal Peh, no oral law. This whole business that the sages have the powers, that they passed on certain things that weren't written, and they have the power to interpret. You know, when we say before the Kaddish in the morning, Rabbi Shmuel Oimer, the 13 ways the Torah is interpreted, that's Torah Shabbal Peh. That's oral law. That's where the Torah now doesn't tell us straight out what's the law, but it empowers the sages to be able to use methods to derive from what's written to what's not written. And so their new platform became, listen, why do I have to listen to the sages? We don't have to listen to the sages. And that people liked. That people ready to join up with. That people ready to say, all right, you mean not listen to the sages, and which also means we can interpret? All right, and that caught on, and unfortunately it caught on well. It caught on well. The Tzedukim caused lots and lots of problems for the Prushim for many years.
Kings.
So I met kings. As a matter of fact, the Talmud talks about there was a man named Yochanan Kohen Gadol. He was the Kohen Gadol. He was the high priest. You know how long he was high priest for? Mishnah says 80 years. So I would assume you can't be Kohen Gadol before your bar mitzvah. That's my assumption. Okay? Can't be Kohen Gadol before your bar mitzvah. So let's assume, right, that he served as the Kohen Gadol, he was 93. And the Mishnah says, and you know what happened at the end? He became a tzaduki. He abandoned a big part of, a major part of everything that he lived by, and at the end, he became a tzaduki. So this power of tzadukim, the influence of tzadukim, was something very, very powerful. And I just want to take the opportunity to give some of the background about it, especially since it relates very much to this week's parsha on these words where it says "Mimachras HaShabbos" on the day after the Shabbos, which again was a major, major point of contention between Tzedukim and the Prushim regarding their conflict.
Are they still with us?
Says the Rambam. Thank you for bringing that up. So Maimonides writes that the present day tzedukim are what we call
reform.
No, no, something before that. Present day tzedukim are called, in English, we call them karites. Karoyim. Karites. I think there's still some group of them somewhere.
I saw.
They were in Turkey. You told me that, right?
I told you.
Was in Israel, Turkey? Where was it?
Ashdod. I went to a...
There's a group of people that, in the times of the Rambam, they were called Karoyim, Karites.
In Russia,
okay, in Russia, there's certain in certain areas, in Europe, in Asia, they live, and there's still some of them around. And from what my father used to always tell me, that the Karaites were famous for their tefillin. Because their tefillin is not square, it's round. Because who says it has to be round? Okay. And the Torah says, where do you wear your tefillin?
Right here, between the eyes.
Bein einecha, between your eyes.
Over your nose.
Now, we know the oral law, Tarshma tells us, bein einecha means on top, in the area between your eyes. And they said, no, it's right in between the eyes. Right in between. That's where they wear the tefillin. Right in between their eyes.
On their nose.
I don't know. Right in between their eyes. But the present day, what's left of the tzedukim, which isn't much and is very scattered and weak, are these people called the Karoyim, which I think in the Rambam's time, maybe they were actually more established and more powerful. But again, you know, the Tzedukim, eventually, they're those who follow their ways called the Karoyim, and like many other things, we're still here, and they're not, and there's not much of them left.
Rabbi Wein says that if they get them to intermarry with the religious Jews and take them in. They get them.
Who says they're even Jewish anymore?
That's what Beryl Wine says.
Okay.
That's what.
Okay. All right, let's move on. And.
Is it a modern approach for Shabbat or Pesach?
No, the Torah approach, believing in the written law and the oral law, that means the day after Pesach.
No, but what we follow?
Pesach.
That means in this case, oral law contradicts?
No, oral law is interpreting.
No, but this is...
The word Shabbos here, oral law says, means Pesach. And Shabbos means a day of rest, right? Pesach is also a day of rest. So the Torah tells us here, Shabbos means Pesach.
That means this word Shabbos can be not only...
Right.
But there is another example, this Shabbat is used, is not Shabbos?
Well, there is a time where you have the word... Hold on. Not exact, but it's pretty much. If you look on page 6, this is in chapter 16, and it's verse 31 in the Art Scholars, page 644. But that would be again. It's chapter 16, verse 31, and this is talking about Yom Kippur. You see it? Shabbat, Shabbosin, hi lochem. Not exactly the same form, but again, you see the word Shabbos means a time of rest. A time to suspend the work that you typically do during the week, or the things that you do typically during the week. Okay, let's turn back. And... Okay. Page 684. And that's it's Pasuk Tesvav, verse 15. Now, Usfartem lochem imachras ha-Shabbos. You shall count for yourselves from the day after the Shabbos. Again, here it means the day after Pesach. B'yom aviyachem esemer atenufa, from the day that you brought the Omer offering that is waived. Sheva Shabbosayis meis tiyana, 7 complete weeks. Amimachras ha-Shabbos ha-Shaviyas hisbru chamishim yoyim. Until the day after the 7th week, which is the 50th day, that's what we shall count up to. V'kravta mincha chadosha l'Hashem, you shall offer a new offering to God. Mimosh v'seichem, from where you dwell, tavio lechem tenufa, you shall bring bread that is waved. Shtayim shtei esreinim, 2 breads, 2 loaves, each one being a tenth of an ephah. Soles tiyena, made from fine flour, this means wheat flour. Chametz teyafena, they shall be baked as chametz. Bikurim l'Hashem, they are the first fruits to Hashem. Now this is referring to, right, 50 days after you start counting the Omer is Shavuos, the holiday of Shavuos. So on Shavuos, there is also a meal offering that's brought. But this meal offering is what's called, referred to as the Shtei Alechem, the 2 breads. There are 2 breads that are brought as offerings to Hashem on Shavuos. These breads are made from wheat, and they are unique in the fact that they are, I believe, the only communal meal offering, communal mincha, that is chametz. Typically, all meal offerings, anything, there are meal offerings that are baked. Torah talks about baking. Certain ones are baked. They're all not chametz. They're all matzah. Here, for regarding a communal sacrifice, and by the karban todah, Thanksgiving sacrifice a person brings, those are the exceptions when the breads are chametz. Okay? So this is brought on Shavuos. This is brought from wheat. Now let's skip a few psukim, because after that Torah talks about there's an animal sacrifice that goes along with the meal offering. And let's go to the bottom of the page, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, verse 21, bottom line. Ukrasim be'etzem ayim azeh, you shall call out, you shall convoke on this very day. Mikra kodesh yelachem, it should be a holy day for you. Kamlechas avodah loisasu, all types of work, you shall all work of all types of activity of work. Loisasu, you shall not do. Chukas shalom b'chomesh v'seichem, an everlasting law in all your dwelling places for all generations. This means Shavuos, it's the holiday of Shavuos. Now, uvekutzrachem es katzir artzachem, and when you harvest the harvest of your land, you shall not finish off the corner of your field as you harvest. And the gleanings of your harvest you shall not gather. For the poor and for the convert, who again is a stranger, he has nothing on his own, you shall leave it for them. I am Hashem your God. So this last pasuk is talking about there are certain things that when we're harvesting our field, we have to leave them. We have to leave over something for the poor. There is a corner of our field we have to leave over for the poor, and any gleanings that fall as we're harvesting, and there are a certain amount of stalks or whatever it is, fall down to the ground, we have to leave them for the poor. Now, it happens to be that Shavuos is called Chag HaKatzer. It's the festival during the harvesting season, and therefore, you know, it's not like totally out of place to talk about certain laws that involve the harvest as we talk about Shavuos. But in essence, this is not really the place to talk about what we leave for the poor. I mean, this discussion of the holidays. That's what it is. And to go ahead and now interject some more laws about what we leave for the poor, I mean, there's other places in the Torah that's discussed. To have to now interject it in the middle of the holidays after Shavuos does seem a bit out of place. Also, after telling us about leaving these gifts for the poor, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I'm Hashem your God. Why here is it so important for the Torah, for Hashem, to have to state here by these mitzvahs, by these obligations to leave for the poor, I am Hashem your God. So the commentary of the Meshech Chachma says is that the reason this is here, especially after the holiday of Shavuos, is because we tend to think that the giving of the Torah that we celebrate on Shavuos, what do we really need that for? We really need that for the kinds of things we wouldn't think of on our own. But giving to the poor, it's the humane thing to do. Plenty of societies have this idea of giving to the poor, of helping people. It's the humane thing. And one might think that you don't really need the Torah for that. You don't really need the Torah to tell us to do that. That's something that essentially we really could have figured out on our own. Says the Torah here, that when you leave for the poor, you're leaving for the poor because the Torah told you to give it for the poor. You're giving to the poor because Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem your God, because I have commanded you. Because if you don't do the gifts to the poor out of understanding that you have an obligation to do that from God, very often you're not going to do it. You can't rely on your humanity to be able to make sure that these things are going to happen. You can't. And the Torah, by making these things a mitzvah, make them an obligation, the Torah makes sure that we will do the humane thing. But without it, we have no guarantees. And therefore, when we celebrate Shavuos, we celebrate the giving of the Torah, we have to bear in mind it includes everything, even the things on our own we could have thought of. We are celebrating the fact that we got them as mitzvahs from Hashem, because that is what makes sure, that's the best guarantee that we'll keep them. And the greatest proof that, you know, that is to rely on one's humanity, that you can't rely on humanity, is Nazi Germany. You were talking about a society, civilized, cultured, polite, manners, and then when the time came, they turned into animals. And I want to share with you, just conclude with a story that really brings this out in an unbelievable way. I've said the story before, but it's definitely worthwhile to repeat. The story goes like this. Towards the end of the war, the Nazis started what was called the Death March, where they marched many of the prisoners of concentration camps in Poland and marched them to death camps in Germany. And there was one young man who was part of the Death March who pleaded for a few minutes rest from the Nazi soldiers, which was a crazy thing to ask for, but he asked for it. And somehow or another, they agreed. They let him rest, but they told him, you better make sure you come back. Yet, he agreed. He sat down for a rest for a few minutes, and he didn't go back. And he ran away, and he found a shack that was, you know, there was hay in the shack, and he hid under the haystack. And as he entered this haystack, he heard a ferocious dog barking that was coming right nearby. This ferocious dog was barking and coming towards the shack. And then he hears the soldiers coming running back, and they say, where is the Jewish swine? Where is he? He must be hiding in that shack. And the dog begins to howl. And to howl. So one soldier, the other soldier says, he couldn't be in there. The dog would have eaten him alive. The other soldier says, let's shoot the dog and enter the shack. Replies the other soldier, have you no compassion? Why would you shoot the poor dog? He never did anything to you. And they left. And that's how this young man survived. This is the story that shows it all. Yeah. This is the story that shows it all. Compassion for a dog, but not compassion for another human being.